I'd like to welcome everybody to the CROG Policy Board meeting. Call to order. Is there any public comment? Going once, twice, anybody? If not, moving on to approval of minutes for October 23rd, 2024. Do I have a motion?
So moved,
we
Lisa
approve
Thomas.
The minutes. Eric Anderson, Town of Andover.
Point of order. I don't know that we have a quorum. Let's do a quick check there.
Want to skip it and go over to staff reports?
I would skip it and we can welcome the commissioner.
Okay.
And I'm happy to do that.
Thank you, Matt.
Great. Well, good afternoon again, everyone. So glad to have you here with us today at our monthly policy board meeting, and very pleased to welcome Commissioner Dan O'Keefe from our Department of Economic and Community Development. We had extended an invitation to the commissioner to see if he would have a chance to spend a few minutes with us to talk about the very good work that his department, his team is doing to support the state and to support our region. I know economic and community development initiatives are important to all of us. So welcome, Commissioner. So good to have you here with us today.
Thanks so much. I just want to share my screen and I it's disabled. Is it possible that the host could enable that?
Yes.
If not, I can talk to it.
Give it just a second for that.
Great.
Be able to share your screen now.
Super, thank you. Let's pop this up. Great. Well, great to see you all. Thank you for having me. I'm going to go through just a couple minutes on the economy and its progression and some of the opportunities and challenges that we're seeing. And then I'll talk a little bit about some of the work of the DECD and the programs that we steward. First, just talk about the backdrop. You know, over the last 6 years, we've seen just a dramatically improved fiscal position. So 6 years of consistent budget surpluses, we've maxed out our rainy day fund at over $4.1 billion. It's statutory cap. All of the credit rating agencies have consistently upgraded our credit, and we've paid down our pension debt by over $8 billion. So if you think about what that means is over the last 6 years, our system, if you will, has produced over $11 billion, and we've really used that to get us back to a place where we have a predictable backdrop and an environment, and that allows us more flexibility to do things with our economic system, things like an historic tax cut, and a tax cut that went to those who needed it most. So this has allowed us to now think about ways where we can now invest more fundamentally in our future. I think of this as sort of paying down the mistakes of our past, and now we can start to think about investing in our growth. So here's the sort of the context as it relates to economic growth. In the last 2 years, so post-pandemic, last 2 years, our economy has grown 19th fastest in the country. To put that in context, in the 2 years prior to the pandemic, we were the 49th worst performing economy in the country. So a pretty dramatic change and an acceleration for a $280 billion economy. It brings up the obvious question, you know, what's changed? And I would argue that this is what changed, that now with the ability to live where you choose to live, rather than necessarily be tied to a commute to a concrete box somewhere, these are the, and by the way, this is that data. This is just the commute distance that we've seen coming out of the pandemic. This isn't a surprise to anybody. People are able to travel further because you don't have to go in every day the way you used to. And so these elements of our economy have started to matter more. You know, these are the reasons why I moved my family here in 2011. By the way, I didn't move here because I studied our GDP progression. I'm not that much of a nerd. I moved here because this was an incredible place to raise a family. These were the soft and fluffy elements of our economy that you know, used to matter less. And now I would argue they're actually comparative advantage. You know, these are the reasons why Connecticut is special. And people are voting for it not only with their wallets, but with their feet. So this is population data. Over the last 3 years, our population has gone up every year. We're the only region in the only state in the region that can say that. By the way, this the backdrop of this slide, the governor always likes to say the moving trucks have turned around. So I asked ChatGPT to generate an image of moving trucks driving into Hartford. If you're wondering what that is. They want me to put a disclaimer on here to tell you all that this is not a real picture. So just FYI, it's not a real picture. And this is that three-year population data aggregated. So in the last 3 years, we've gained over 10,000 new residents. And you can see what's happened to the other states in the region. New York's lost over 600,000 people in that time frame. Okay, so that's the backdrop and the acceleration we've seen in our economy. This is a good moment for Connecticut. And we want to invest against this moment that we're experiencing. So what are we doing to do so? First is Boost. Hopefully you're all aware of our small business lending program. This is a small business lending program at a 4.5% fixed rate. Our goal is to have 50% or greater of these funds go to minority and women-owned businesses. I'm proud to say we're well ahead of that. Over 60% has gone to that constituency. So a very successful, active program. If you're a small business owner, I would really encourage you to consider this program. Partially because of that work, we've also established, by the way, an Office of Innovation working with startups. You know, we've seen this growth in this, not only growth, but accelerating growth in new business startups. I often get the question, well, didn't everybody leave and go to Florida? Didn't everybody leave and go to the Carolinas? You know, we've heard a lot about that in and around the pandemic. By the way, those states did benefit from population growth during and after the pandemic. But the facts aren't quite that stark. You know, our new business growth grew faster than any other state in the region, grew faster than Texas, grew faster than Florida. You know, again, it's a pretty significant growth. So I mentioned in the middle here, the Office of Innovation that is now established and we're staffing up. But we also have a couple other things that we're doing. One is Connecticut Innovations. This is our state's venture capital fund. It's been around for over 30 years, very successful, self-funding. Innovation Clusters is a new program. This is a program we announced, I guess, probably about 3 months ago now, which is a $100 million program in support of the application of next generation technologies. Think things like artificial intelligence and quantum to our core industries. And core industries for us, I think everyone knows it. It's supply chains in support of our national defense. It's finance and insurance. It's healthcare and biotech. We haven't yet the RFI here closed. I can tell you we got 32 responses, which was really, really healthy. And there's incredible proposals in there that we're working through now. Now, why is Connecticut a natural home for innovation? You know, we make incredibly complicated things here. You know, we talk a lot about the fact that the submarine was invented here. The first nuclear submarine was delivered here 70 years ago. The helicopter was invented here. We if you actually look at things like Sikorsky and Pratt & Whitney and Electric Boat, what invention is happening every day. Yes, those inventions happened over 100 years ago, but these inventions and this innovation is happening every day. And not only in those areas around our national defense, but really across the entire state. You know, we have got an incredibly highly skilled workforce here doing very, very interesting things. And we're seeking to continue to support that. The manufacturing sector I mentioned, so this is over 12% of our GDP. It is principally about 90% of that is in and around our national defense. We do have funds to support that continued growth and innovation so that the Manufacturing Innovation Fund is a fund that we manage through our Office of Manufacturing to support emergent and growing manufacturers. And here's some of the reasons why manufacturing works so well here. You know, if you were to say to yourself, where are you going to put a big manufacturing sector in 2024? You wouldn't necessarily pick the Northeast, high cost of labor, high cost of energy. But because we have this 100-year legacy of really understanding and building, again, these incredibly complicated things, we are one of the top states and certainly on a per capita basis in terms of this particular sector. We do spend a lot of time around business development. One of our challenges is, you know, when GE packed up and left, for example, headlines everywhere. When companies leave the state, there's a lot of press about it. When companies stay, grow, or establish operations here, it's often done quietly. So we do want to just remind everybody that we have a group called Advanced CT, which every single day is working on helping our companies grow here and then also attract companies to the state. Here's some of the efforts that happened in 2023, just to kind of give you a sense. Workforce remains a challenge for us. The chart on the left just shows job openings rates. I don't really like the chart because it's just us versus the US and it kind of suggests we're doing okay. But if you could see the data on the bottom, our job openings rate, which by the way, you never want to be zero. Any functioning economy has job openings clearly, but we're still about 1% behind where we were prior to the pandemic. We still have more jobs here than people to fill them. And so we're continuing to work on our workforce of the future. We're investing $145 million in workforce. The governor established a governor's workforce council. We're working very closely with our higher ed to not only produce the workforce of the future, but convince them to stay and take advantage of that high quality of life I mentioned before. Okay, high quality of life. Again, this is a real area of comparative advantage for us. So what I just mentioned in the last section was really ways we're supporting the economy. And these are ways that we're supporting our communities. So first is the Community Investment Fund. This is an $875 million fund. So one of our largest programs. I'll give you an example of what this fund does because I was just there yesterday. Yesterday, the governor and I announced that the PSEG plant in Bridgeport, which anyone who's driven, you don't have to go to Bridgeport to see it because anyone who's driven on 95 past Bridgeport, you see it off to your right or to your left, depending on which direction you're going, but in the right in front of the water. And so the Community Investment Fund is putting $22.5 million to bring down that horrible eyesore. I called it yesterday a dystopian hellscape, and I don't think that's an inaccurate description. And we'll see what goes there eventually, but our hope is and our expectation is that it'll be, you know, mixed use, including a lot of workforce housing. We are investing aggressively in housing, and this is the Department of Housing. This is not my department, but investing $800 million in housing over 3 years. That's almost 3x that the rate at which we've been investing. And then Brownfields is a $300 million program that targets these old abandoned mills and industrial sites to help clean them up and get them ready for development. This is housing starts. This is net housing added. If you go back 15 years, it was sort of flat in that 4 to 5K range. And now we're finally starting to see some real acceleration of the amount of housing in the state. That's a really big increase and an increase we haven't seen in 15 years. I think two things are happening. One, I mentioned, you know, we as a state are supporting the addition of housing. But the other aspect is our economy, you know, is just doing well, which attracts home builders. You know, people see the opportunity and the growth. And it takes a bit of time for this to happen because you can't wave your magic wand and just produce housing. But we're starting to finally now really see real growth. Last piece I'll mention, these are some of the other areas that we manage within the DECD that I think is really important as it relates to the vibrancy of our communities. So tourism, which I think of as our sort of our effective sales force, you know, our tourism dollars go out in other states to attract people into come to Connecticut. Our arts and museums, this is really about our culture. And so we have a Department of the Arts within DEC that supports our arts and our museums and also historic preservation throughout the state. And that, lastly, we do manage marketing and branding. The state's chief marketing officer, his name's Anthony, two first names, one vision. But he also has spent a lot of time rebranding the state. And hopefully you've seen that. We had that still revolutionary tagline, which just was getting so dated. So we've really updated the sort of the branding and the look of the feel of all the state's work, which I very much have appreciated. So that's it. I'm happy to take questions if we have time. I wasn't sure if we did.
Thank you so much for your excellent presentation there, Commissioner. Lori, we certainly have time for policy board members to, you know, ask the commissioner a few questions, share some reflections.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for the commissioner?
Lisa Thomas has her hand raised.
Yep, I see that. Go ahead, okay. Lisa.
First, I have a comment. Thank you very much for that presentation. It was really informative and helpful. We just see so many headlines and comments and spin telling us that Connecticut is a horrible place to live, which I have never believed in. I love living here. I'm glad I transplanted here as a young adult and have been able to thrive here and raise my family here. I'm also wondering if it's possible to get a copy of that slide deck. It's information I would very much love to share at a town council meeting. Although, Commissioner, if you wanted to ever come in virtually and give this presentation to my council, I would absolutely love that.
Yeah, happy to do it. It's a big part of the job, but I'm also happy to share these slides. I've actually thought about just open sourcing them because what you describe, you know, kind of the skepticism and the headlines, it's a real challenge. because I know what's informing that skepticism. I lived here during the lost decade as well. And by the way, for those who might not have been here then, this is the decade between 2008 and 2018, the 10 years post-global financial crisis. Over the course of those 10 years, our economy contracted. We got smaller on an inflation-adjusted basis. Only three states can say that, by the way, us, Wyoming, and Mississippi. No offense to those two states. It's not really the economic competition I consider. So it was really bad. And it really did inform or drive this sort of culture of skepticism. And I like to say we're our own biggest skeptics, because we're sort of skeptical in the face of what has actually been a fundamental change in our trajectory. And the reason why I describe it as a real challenge for me is skepticism is an economic toxin, right? Because if you're skeptical, you don't invest. You know what? You wouldn't hire that person or buy that piece of equipment or start that business. So I'm really just trying to get the real data out there, because the acceleration, the pandemic was the luckiest thing that ever happened to our economy. it was the economic slap in the face our system needed. And it got us out of what was a self-reinforcing negative cycle into what I believe right now is a self-reinforcing positive cycle. Now, you mentioned the headlines. I had a reporter call me a few weeks ago, and he said, I want to talk to you about Connecticut's declining population figures. And I called him back and I said, what are you talking about? I'm staring at the data right here. It's increasing. He said, well, no, domestically we're decreasing, which is true, by the way. So we tend to lose more people to Southern states than we gain from Massachusetts and New York. So we gain mostly from Massachusetts and New York, people in their 20s. We tend to lose people to Florida, et cetera, who are retirees. And we have an aging population like the whole US does. So we tend to lose people domestically, but then we make it up with international in-migration. So I walked him through all these trends and I saw the reporter the next day and he said, you know, you got me in trouble. And I said, why? He said, well, after I talked to you, I changed my headline. And I looked it up and you can still see it. It's still up, this article is still out there. It says, Connecticut loses thousands of people, comma, but total population goes up. And I tell you the story because that's what we're faced with, right? We're just faced with, people don't like to talk or write or read about the positive because it's why we slow down a car wrecks. The negative is a little bit more interesting. It's our quirk of our human psyche. So it's just really important for me to talk to groups like these and the groups you mentioned, because I need to recruit you all. You know, I need you to recruit you all into the actual facts, the actual data, so that the other 3.6 million people I haven't gotten to yet start to hear this story.
Well, if you want to share your best contact information in our chat,
I will.
We'll reach out to you immediately.
Great. I'm going to put a website in here, and there's also, you'll see there's an invite tab if you want to extend an invite to something that goes right to my chief of staff.
Great. Thank you so much.
Does anybody else have any questions?
Lori, it's Matt. I've got a quick question if no one else has one.
Yeah, actually, if I may, Commissioner, so with all this progress, like, what's the one thing that has surprised you the most in terms of positive reaction? Maybe, you know, you knew it was a good thing, but you were maybe surprised by how much of a good thing it was to outside investors and people looking at Connecticut. Maybe what's the one thing that you're really proud of that people, similar to the population numbers, people just aren't getting?
Yeah.
In terms of what we're improving.
Sure. And good to see you, Jeff. So I think the biggest surprise I had, so if you actually dig into what's driving the acceleration, it's two things. It's a resurgence in our manufacturing sector. So that was as high as 17% of our GDP. That was in the years post 9/11, that kind of post 9/11 buildup. And then it got as low as 10% of our GDP. Mm-hmm. That was the great sucking sound we heard during the last decade. You can't have 17% of your GDP a trip like that and not have it impact the overall economy. Now it's accelerating again, and it's 12.6% of our GDP. So a surprise to me is the fact that the manufacturing sector, which is a high energy sector, is growing as fast as it is. But I will tell you all, it's growing despite ourselves. And I say that because our industrial energy prices are 117% higher than the rest of the United States. You ask the question why that is. And by the way, I'm an environmentalist, but I'm also a realist and an economist. So I'm going to tell you what's really happening. 10 years ago, New England stopped allowing new natural gas through. No new pipeline projects. They all got shut down. And a lot of folks, by the way, got rid of nuclear here and in Europe. Thankfully, we still have a nuclear power plant in Millstone. you look at our wholesale energy market right now, 10% is renewables, 22% is nuclear, and 46% is gas. The balance is the dirty stuff we don't like to talk about, but still exists. So we have a real challenge here in that. So we're part of a regional grid. You know, the ISO is all of New England. We're the only state with where manufacturing is 12% and growing. Every other state is 8% or less and declining. So I've been saying this, and I'll say it here. You know, I consider relative energy prices to be the greatest existential threat to our continuing economic progression. Every manufacturing company I meet with, and every company where energy is a core input, brings this up. And by the way, it's not only a problem now, it's also a problem in the future. Because if you look at these areas of innovation, I mentioned quantum, I mentioned artificial intelligence, these are high energy input sectors. So it's also a problem as it relates to forward growth, not just existing growth. Now, what's the biggest surprise as I dug into this? The governor asked me 5 times to get involved with energy strategy. 4 times I went back to my then boss, who was the commissioner before me, and she said, don't do it. It's a, you know, there's no solution here. And the 5th time he was the boss. So I just said, yes. So I've really spent a long time on this issue. The biggest surprise I have is you can't, states are left to their own to figure this out. We have to buy, you know, we bought the state of Connecticut. Listen to how absurd this is. Sorry, I'm going on too long here.
No, please.
You can tell I really care about this. Listen to how absurd this is. We the state of Connecticut, prepaid for 45% of Millstone's output at what will likely end up being above market rates. We had to do it. We had to keep them here. But those megawatts are poured into the grid, and we, the state of Connecticut, are a net energy exporter. So that our state is paying for megawatts getting consumed by Massachusetts. It's absurd to me. Now I understand how we got here. Again, there's all these sort of individual decisions were made about procurements. And that's why it's crazy to me that states are left to their own when it's going into a regional grid. I have been working along with Commissioner Dykes and DEEP to really get the region collaborating more about these procurements. It really just shouldn't be individual states when you're part of a regional network. Too long of an answer, but
that's a great answer. There's some hard
decisions coming up, and politically fraught decisions coming up. If we want to get our energy prices down, and I think just people need to be aware, because there's going to be a lot of headlines about, you know, how come we don't have more renewables yet? And it's just, these things just take time.
Great answer. Thanks.
Anybody else have any questions?
Well, Lori, this is Matt. My question was very similar to Jeff, so I'm good and want to thank the commissioner for spending some time with us today.
My pleasure. Great to see you all.
Thank you so much.
Commissioner. Appreciate the good work.
You bet. Bye now.
Matt, I'm going to go back to number 3, approval of minutes, since we have a quorum for October 23rd, 2024. Do I have a motion somebody'd like to make?
Motion to approve the minutes. Eric Anderson, Town of Andover.
Second, okay. Lisa Thomas.
Point of order, Lori. I forgot. I should have said this at the beginning. We need. I would ask the person who made Eric who made the motion and the second to accept as a friendly amendment. We need to clarify that Raul DeJesus from the city of Hartford was in attendance at the last meeting. So that small revision to the minute.
Thank you.
So it'd be a motion to accept the minutes as corrected?
Yeah.
As amended? Yes. Okay. So we have a motion. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. Moving on to staff reports. Matt?
Yes, I'll take the lead here. Thank you, Lori. So starting off in the area of general announcements, really exciting news on Friday. I'm sure many of you saw this, that Connecticut has been awarded $291 million in federal dollars to support good rail projects across the Northeast Corridor, including $113 million for the Hartford line. Much of that for double tracking, planning for the Connecticut River Bridge, as well as planning for the relocation of Union Station, which is part of a much, much larger project. But great news there and very exciting news. Secondly, Yes, I like that. Way to go, Chris. As I discussed with the executive committee at its last meeting, we want to experiment with a new agenda item. So towards the end of today's agenda item, we've added something called municipal information sharing. And this is something that Peter Souza and the Municipal Services Committee use on a regular basis. This is an opportunity for you to briefly share something that's happening in your town that you think would be interesting for your colleagues to know, or something important to the region. And I know Mayor Ken Lesser will have something when we get to that point on the agenda. So we're going to experiment with this and see how it works. Next, I'd like to thank the members of our Capital Region Incident Management Team, and that's comprised of public safety and other members from all of your communities. You know, they did a tremendous job helping to respond to the Hawthorne Fire. And I want to thank Cheryl Assis and Bill Perkins from our team in particular. I have asked them to provide you with a briefing at your next meeting. So just a really, really important service that our Capital Region Incident Team provides to us all. Next, CROG and Novus Insight will be holding some cybersecurity training workshops. Could be very useful for your staff. So watch for information on that. Next slide, please. So moving on to cooperative purchasing and funding opportunities, please check out the most recent edition of our newsletter. Want to thank Elizabeth Sanderson for her continued great work in putting that together each and every month. Our purchasing coalition did issue a gasoline bid on November 14th, so ask your purchasing folks to make sure that they replied to that. Connecticut DEEP has two grants open right now for open space and farmland preservation. So one is the traditional open space and watershed land grant program. And the second one, which is more recent and looks really intriguing to me, is one designed for our urban communities. And this is an urban green and community garden grant program. Applications are due December 2nd for that. A couple of federal grants, RAISE, which has been one of the more popular and best known grants for transportation related infrastructure. Those who submitted a grant but were denied in round one, they can reapply as of December 2nd. And new applicants, round two, those will be due on January 3rd. And then the PROTECT grant, which can be another federal grant opportunity, which can be used for stormwater management and protect roads from flooding and a variety of related purposes. Those applications will be due on December 24th. And if you have questions about any of these, state or federal, do not hesitate to reach out to Elizabeth and she can provide you with some guidance. Next slide, please. Moving on to some project updates and some departmental updates. I want to give some kudos to Kyle Scheel from our team, other CROG staff and COG staff from around the state. They recently hosted a very successful statewide climate action forum. And that was funded in part by our Climate Pollution Reduction Grant. And members of your staff and state staff members and other interested stakeholders got together to talk about the good work we're doing and what more we can do to address climate change in our communities. Moving on, very pleased that our Regional Stormwater Authority feasibility study, you know, we're beginning to make some progress there. We're nearing the end of the consultant procurement step in that project. If you're interested in participating, if you haven't signed on already, please contact Heidi Samokar. I apologize for the slight typo in the spelling of Heidi's name, but please contact her by email and she'll get back to you soon. Our regional micromobility program is doing really good things. What are we, Pauline? Over 50,000 rides already in the city of Hartford with our partner Veo?
Oh,
That's okay. Don't bother. But it's proven to be very successful in the city of Hartford. We're looking to expand it to other communities. Please contact Mike Cipriano if you're interested. Our Berlin Turnpike planning study. This is recall. CROG's receiving a RAISE grant to improve safety along the entire 11 to 12 mile length of the turnpike. We're planning to bid that project out in early 25 and looking forward to getting going with that. I want to thank you all for adopting our regional natural hazard mitigation and climate action plan. There are one or two towns that still have to take that step. If you're one of those and you need some help, please don't hesitate to reach out to Heidi. And then we also have a walk audit program, which can be utilized to assess pedestrian safety along key roadways in your community. If you're interested in a walk audit, we've conducted four of those thus far. Please contact Mike Cipriano from our team. Next slide, please. Couple of committee updates for you. Our Vision Zero Task Force is planning a Vision Zero workshop and forum for early next year. And Vision Zero, it centers around traffic safety, as you may know. And the tools are applicable for any size or any type community. So including our rural communities, our urban centers, and our suburbs. So we're really going to be looking to feature our communities that are doing good work in this area and hoping for great attendance at this event. So watch for more news on that. Our Municipal Services Committee will meet at noon on December 10th. We did reschedule due to the CCM convention. Our Cybersecurity Task Force, which we conduct in collaboration with the state, will be meeting on December 12th. If you'd like to attend, please contact Eric Snowden from our team. And then our Human Services Coordinating Council would encourage you all to reach out to your human services folks to make sure that you've got a representative. This group meets quarterly. They're going to meet again on December 17th. Please contact Robin Nichols with any questions. And then lastly, I want to wrap up with meetings and events here. Those of you who have been on the policy board for a little while, you may recall that we used to partner with UConn School of Public Policy to host panel discussions about important policy topics. We're looking to resume that now, and we're going to hold our first one on December 11th. I know that's coming up quick. We'll be getting an invitation out to that next week. And this panel discussion is going to focus on untapped talent. And these are segments of our population that are struggling to get into the workforce. And we want to talk about why and what we can do in order to better access that talent. I want to thank Kim Bishop from our team for putting that together. And then last but certainly not least, we'll be very pleased to welcome our state's attorney general, William Tong, to attend your next policy board meeting, the last board meeting of the calendar year. And he's going to talk about the good work that the state is doing to protect minors from illicit drugs and other important topics. So that's all I have for you today. Lori, happy to take any questions that you or other policy board members may have.
Thank you, Matt. Does anybody have any questions? You gave us a lot of information. Anybody?
So I see a question from Lisa Thomas in the chat. Laura, December 18th is virtual, correct? Yes.
That's correct.
All right. If no other further questions, we'll move on to number five, legislative updates. With Donna.
Thank you, Lori. Me. Very pleased to welcome Donna Hamsey for the first time in her new role.
Thank you so much, Lori, and thank you, Matt. Very excited to be here with you all to give you just a brief update from a legislative perspective, not only ahead of the legislative session, but just a recap briefly on the election cycle for 2024. In the CROG region overall, incumbents won the day. In the 58th district, Democratic John Santanello won against his Republican opponent, the seat left open because of Tom Arnone's incumbent Tom Arnone's retirement. In the 65th district, House District, Republican Joe Canino defeated longtime Democratic incumbent Michelle Cook. And while this is not specifically relevant to the CROG delegation, this race did initiate an automatic recount in the 8th Senate District, which is part of the CROG region between Republican incumbent Lisa Seminara, who had previously conceded, but as a result of the recount, has rescinded her concession to her Democratic opponent, Paul Honig. That recount is happening actually today and tomorrow, so we should have some results after tomorrow. Overall, on the state level, Democrats made gains in an already heavily Democratic state House of Representatives and state Senate. In the Senate, Democrats picked up one seat for a majority of 25 to 11 Republicans. And in the House of Representatives, Democrats picked up an additional four seats in the House that were held previously by Republicans. This will increase the majority from its current 98 Democrats to 35 Republicans in the House. Some seats remain somewhat close to call, but I think most of them are flushed out at this point. But it looks like number totals will be 102 for Democrats and to the, compared to the House Republicans at 31. From a federal perspective, generally speaking, all our incumbent senator and congresspeople won the day, and Kamala Harris took the win here in the state of Connecticut. Moving to forward to January for the legislative session, the 25 session does start. It's the first of the two-year session to establish the biennium budget, and commonly known as the long session. The opening day is January 8th, and the statutory adjournment for now is June 4th at midnight. Stay tuned if there may be a special session, it being a budget year, that could potentially happen. Schedules for the General Assembly session should be available on the opening day, January 8th. This will help to give us some insights to the committee meetings and public hearing schedules and also the bill deadlines. At this time, there's a lot of conversation around committee chair announcements. Some of those announcements have been made by publicly by House Democrats for now. Maria Horn will continue as Finance Chair. Tony Walker will continue as Appropriations Chair. And Steve Stafstrom will continue as Judiciary Chair. Relevant in the CROG region is Eleni Kabros-DeGraw, who will continue as the Planning and Development Chair. And the announcements for both education, formerly Jeff Curry, who is retiring, and general law, who formerly was chaired by Michael D'Agostino, are still up in the air with several front runners jockeying for the job. And as we gear up for the upcoming legislative session, Matt and I are working with the CROG Legislative Committee to create the 2025 CROG legislative agenda. And that was all for my update. Happy to take any questions if anyone has them.
Anybody have any questions for Donna? Great job. Thank you so much, Donna.
Thank you, Lori.
Any questions? Thanks. Moving on to action items. Number six, resolution to adopt the 2024 Plan of Conservation and Development, POCD, for the Capital Region, posted. Matt?
Yes, thank you, Lori. So this is a very, very important project for CROG. It's something that our staff team under the direction of Caitlin Palmer have been working on for over a year now. Like all of you, you have a POCD in your local communities. We're required to have one at the regional level as well. We utilize it to help shape our strategic direction, to support our projects, and for other related purposes. So very pleased to welcome Heidi Samokar from our team. Heidi has served as the project manager, and I did ask her to provide you with a brief presentation today, just given the importance of this project. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you. Can everybody see the presentation okay?
Looks good.
Okay. I'm pleased to be here for the final stage of the Regional Plan of Conservation and Development. I'm going to do a really quick recap of the process, some of the key points and themes in the plan. You've seen these slides last May for the workshop we did for the policy board, and then you've seen the substance of the plan over the summer from Caitlin sent an email with the link when the formal public review process began, and then we did provide a link in the resolution and on the web page. So today I'll do the really brief presentation, and then we are requesting your adoption of the plan today. Just a reminder that state statutes require councils of governments to have a plan of conservation and development and similar to you to readopt it every 10 years. And then our bylaws set out the process that first sent it to the Regional Planning Commission. They endorsed it in September, and now it's in your hands to adopt. As a reminder, we did work with a technical advisory committee that was comprised of 13 cities and towns within our region. And we also had a really robust public engagement process where we estimate that we reached out to over 1,000 residents within the region through a variety of methods. And what we heard through public engagement really drove the themes that we developed for this plan. So what is in the plan of conservation and development? We set an overall vision that we will all work together to build communities of choice, opportunity, and belonging. So we took everything we heard and organized it under five overall themes, which I'll touch very briefly on each of these themes. The first one is to cultivate a green and resilient future. We took into consideration that we're all seeing more mandates to undertake new regulations. We really saw a heightened importance for open space protection during the pandemic, and we are seeing the impacts from climate change. So we have five overall goals for the various elements in this theme, including protecting natural resources, preserving open space and farmland, reducing our gas emissions, and being more resilient. So we threw in the presentation just a sampling of some of the strategies and actions for each theme. So for example, encouraging farm-friendly zoning regulations, helping municipalities with their stormwater MS4 requirements. I can't go through them all. We would be here until 5 o'clock if we went through all the actions in the plan. The next theme is about our economy, to develop a competitive and inclusive regional economy. We heard great news from the commissioner earlier, but we also recognize looking backward, we've had stagnant job growth. And we also recognize that as a region, we need strong cities, we need competitive suburbs, and we also recognize that our rural areas need economic development opportunities. So we had seven goals in this chapter, including building our own capacity at CROG to do economic development, strengthening Hartford, and also addressing some of the challenges that our communities face, including underutilized commercial strips, and some of the challenges our rural communities face. Again, a sampling of the strategies and actions for that chapter includes investing in the power of fun and placemaking, reestablishing access to the waterfront, particularly along the Connecticut River, and really figuring out how to capitalize and reuse underutilized office space. Another theme is to reform outdated study habits in our institutions and governance. We recognized a lot of the benefits, but also limitations of each municipality taking on certain services that might, there might be more efficiency at a regional level. So there were four goals in this theme, including improving public service delivery through shared services and partnerships, and enhancing operational efficiency and effectiveness of local government operations, among other goals. A sampling of strategies and actions includes reforming the pilot system and looking to interlocal or regional solutions for state mandated boards and commissions, along with many other actions and strategies. Next, we look at investing in transportation options for every journey. We recognize that while there are options, we need more opportunities, especially to get around without a car, and also recognizing that our transportation system should also support our sense of place and identity. Three overall goals to align investments with land use, housing, and other development and placemaking goals, expanding transportation options, and also addressing some of the burdens and costs that we see from our transportation system. Samplings of some of the actions, providing safe, appealing, and accessible walking and bicycling infrastructure, proactively planning for transit-dependent older populations, and also prioritizing safety improvements. That's something we see a lot in the news right now. And then the last theme is to expand and diversify the region's housing stock. I don't think there's anything surprising here that we have a shortage of housing supply and affordable housing. So the goals include not only expanding the amount of housing, but also preserving our existing housing stock to make sure it remains safe and habitable, and also building housing adjacent to transit and increasing affordable housing in the region. A few types of strategies and actions found in the plan include repairing, rehabilitating, and using enforcement mechanisms to keep existing housing units for use. Also working with stakeholders, including non-traditional stakeholders, to really address housing issues within the region, and looking at light touch density in areas where it might be appropriate. So the plan culminates in a policy map, which helps to identify areas in the region which are more suitable and maybe less suitable for development. And this is the map that we use when we're doing land use referrals. So I was going to call this slide, "So what? Why does it matter?" Well, for us at CROG, we use it, as I mentioned, for referrals. We use it when we apply for grants and discretionary funding, and also to inform our work plan. So how can you use this plan? First off, the plan contains a lot of data and information, so you can get a sense region-wide what is going on, also to quickly look at what's going on in your neighboring communities and your own community. We also hope you'll use the plan to support your efforts. When you are applying for grants, we often get a request to write a letter of support, and we look to the plan to provide that support. We think it can help you implement your own policy and planning initiatives and to advocate for change either within your community or at the state level. We also think the plan provides a good conversation starter, maybe for a topic your community is almost ready or just about ready to start talking about. You can always look to our plan and say, "Hey, CROG is thinking about this. What do we think about this within our community?" And then also you can use the policy map to help justify local development decisions and also conservation decisions. So here's our timeline. We are at November, your approval. As I mentioned, the Regional Planning Commission approved the plan at September 19th and forwarded to you. And then post-approval, the fun begins. That's when we start looking at implementation and coming back to you on an annual basis to show progress. So with that, I'm open to any questions, and you also have in front of you an agenda item summary and also a resolution for adoption.
So do you want a motion to accept?
Yes, Lori, if someone could move the resolution we presented here. And I want to thank Heidi for her excellent overview.
So moved, Chris Edge.
Second, Nishat Blackburg-Windsor.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Motion passes. Thank you so much, Heidi.
Thank you.
And I think you're going to be up again. Number 7, moving on to that. Matt?
Yes, very pleased that we're finalizing our procurement for the early stages of our regional housing strategy. We would like to retain the firm of Goman and York, who does good work in many of our communities and across the region and around the state as well. Heidi will also be serving as the project manager here. Heidi, any quick comments you want to add in addition? And we will be seeking the board's approval.
I would simply add this was a competitive project. We were very pleased to have 7 submittals. We narrowed it down to 4 for interviews, and Goman & York was the highest rated firm coming out of interviews.
Great. So we would like a motion and a second. If somebody would like to make that.
Chris Edge, might as well keep going.
Thank you. Second?
I'll second. Lisa Thomas.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody oppose? Okay. Motion passes. Moving on to number 8, resolution to establish a fellowship at the University of Connecticut in honor of Lyle.
I'll be happy to speak to this, Lori, but first I want to thank Chris Edge for doing his best John Coleman imitation today and taking all the motions. Thank you so much, Chris.
You're welcome.
This is a very important item. I don't want to make light of it. This is something that the executive committee has been discussing. We want to find a way to honor Lyle Ray, you know, my predecessor, who many of us knew well, who served our region for 17 years, was a mentor to me, and I know many others. So earlier this year, we talked about the possibility of establishing a fellowship in Lyle's name at the University of Connecticut School of Public Policy. Lyle had a very good work relationship with the faculty there, sponsored a variety of joint initiatives. So we thought that that would be a very, very appropriate way to acknowledge Lyle and the tremendous contributions he made over the course of his career. So we've connected with the UConn Foundation. They provided us with the information that we need to establish a fellowship. And our proposal here, and we did review this with our executive committee, would be that CROG contribute $75,000 to create the endowment, or the principal, if you will, that would generate a small annual fellowship to start in the $3,000 to $5,000 range, still enough to be impactful for a student. And we would seek to grow this award over time through an annual solicitation that the UConn School of Public Policy would maintain in collaboration with the UConn Foundation. And we've suggested that the school award the fellowship to a student with an interest in regional planning or regional government. Pauline Yoder has identified a funding source here. She's recommended that we utilize interest income on some of our interest bearing accounts. If you have specific questions there, Pauline can certainly elaborate if needed, but we can certainly support an amount of $75,000. So that's what we're seeking here, Lori. We've got a resolution to this effect, and Pauline and I are happy to take any questions you might have.
Matt, I think that's great. Lyle was a wonderful man, and he had his whole heart into CROG. Anybody have any questions? Do you need a motion on this?
Yes, someone to move the resolution, please.
This is Jason.
I'll take the second.
Okay, did you get who made the motion?
Yes, we had Jason Bauza and then Chris Edge. Thank you both.
Okay, very good. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody oppose? Motion passes. Moving on to number 9. Resolution authorizing CROG Executive Director to apply for and accept certain grants and contracts. Pauline?
So the list that you have in the resolution are grants and contracts that we do basically on an annual basis or some regular basis before the board. And this is just to streamline that process, because sometimes timing is really important. And with the board meeting once a month, sometimes the turnaround time can be a little bit challenging depending on when we get the grants, when we have the grants, when we're notified that we've received the grants. And so this would allow Matt to accept grants that that are listed on the resolution, primarily programs that we already have or already do and are not out of the ordinary of what we normally what we have in our either in our strategic plan or what we do on an annual basis.
And Pauline, we did review this with the executive committee, right? And they provided us with some feedback that we incorporated.
Okay, you have a motion?
Anybody? Chris Edge.
And a second?
Nishat Blackburg Windsor.
Okay, any more discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Anybody oppose?
Aye.
Pauline, is the air a little thin up there? We could just about hear you sitting on top of the mountain.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have put my microphone closer to me. I'm sorry. It's because I'm far away from my laptop. I apologize.
No, no problem. I just thought the air was a little thinner. Okay, moving on to number 10, approval of 2025 Executive Committee and Policy Board meeting dates as posted.
I can briefly speak to this, Lori. This is pro forma. We need the board's approval of the schedule for next year, as well as for the executive committee. This is very similar to 2024. We've got hybrid meetings roughly once a quarter, our annual meeting in June. For the policy board, we try to meet the fourth Wednesday of the month, you know, a few exceptions here and there for conferences, et cetera. And the executive committee would meet roughly six times a year. We would cancel meetings if not needed. Sometimes it is a challenge for us to obtain a quorum, as you all know. So I know it's a lot of meetings, but hopefully you find them to be useful. And we greatly appreciate your continued attendance and participation. So we've got a resolution that I would ask through you, Lori, someone to move and hopefully a vote in support.
We have a motion, please.
Chris Edge.
Second.
Any more discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Moving on to Metropolitan Planning and Organizing Items. Number 11, TIP Amendments. John Coleman.
Yes, John is not able to attend today, Lori. So Rob Eloise, our Director of Transportation Planning, will take the lead on this item. And we will need a motion to approve. Rob, welcome.
Thanks, Matt. Excuse me. We have 8 TIP amendments this month, and you can see them on your screen. 6 of these amendments are already projects that are in the TIP. So these are just changes to the delivery date of the project due to either accelerated or delays of the project getting obligated, or changes to the funding amount due to cost increases. 3 of these show up as deleted projects in the details of the attachment. They are not actually deleted. The projects are still going on. It's just that specific funding year item had to get deleted because some of them have already advanced in 2024. So the funding in the next year is not necessary. There are 2 new projects. I'll just point those 2 out to you. One is number 5, East Hartford-Hartford, Route 2, Greater Hartford Mobility Study Project. And this is really the first phase of a highway reconfiguration through Hartford. And it's a study and the environmental phase and the preliminary design of extending Route 2 up to 91 with a new bridge over the Connecticut River. This would be, if and when the full Greater Hartford Mobility Study relocation plan comes to fruition, this would eventually be the new I-84 when 84 west of the river is relocated. But for now, it would be a Route 2 extension up to 91. Once that whole 84 is hopefully relocated in the future, the current 84 Canyon through Hartford would be returned to a local street, and also the Bulkley Bridge would be returned to a local road. So it's very exciting first step in a project that has both federal and state funding of significant state portion. It's going to be about $30 million just in the environmental phase and design phase. So it's a large project. The other new project is number 8, which is a grant that DOT was awarded from a new funding source through the new federal transportation bill to study all the locations in Connecticut where wildlife and vehicles conflict or there's crashes with wildlife. Every year, it's estimated that at least 2,000 deer are hit, 40 bear are hit. So this is to just assess that, and there will be rounds of funding in the future to try to come up with projects to hopefully help those situations and reduce injuries to people, property damage, and of course, impacts to wildlife. So those are the TIP amendments. The Transportation Committee has reviewed and approved them and recommends the same to the Policy Board.
Thank you, Rob. Does anybody have any questions for Rob? If not, would somebody like to make a motion?
So moved, Chris Hedge.
And a second, please.
Wendy Maxtudis, Simsbury.
Thank you, Wendy. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Information opportunity resources, correspondence, handouts, Matt?
Yes, very quickly, Lori, and hopefully folks can stay on for just a few more minutes. I've attached a letter and want to thank Heidi Samokar once again. She's been the star of today's meeting for helping me prepare this letter. This is really a letter to the state asking them to make some amendments to their technical standards to help make certain sewage disposal systems, notably water softeners, more safe, because we've had issues in a handful of our communities with contamination to private wells due to these type of systems. So really looking for the state to tighten up there, and that's what this letter is all about. And then next, I wanted to turn to our new agenda item. This is something we're piloting, municipal information sharing, maybe just a couple minutes on this. If anyone has any information they'd like to share with their colleagues, and I know that Mayor Ken Lesser from Wethersfield has an announcement.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate the time. So this Friday from 9 to 11, we will be hosting a chief elected officials meeting. I'm super excited about this. We will be holding it at the Webb Dean Stevens Museum, which is historic grounds where George Washington planned the Battle of Yorktown with Rochambeau for 4 or 5 days in 1781. You'll get to see that. But the purpose of the meeting is to build relationships, share best practices, particularly important for someone new like me and other new chief elected officials. We'll also get an update from Matt on important CROG items for the region. And I hope this is the first of quarterly meetings that folks around the region will host. And I'm looking forward to seeing many of you Friday morning from 9 to 11, this Friday morning. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you so much, Mayor. And we're looking forward to that session. And I know your focus is for chief elected officials for that one. Great. Any other policy board members have anything they'd like to share with their colleagues?
I'll share something that I was going to share tomorrow. Our town has created a charter revision commission, and my interest would be to look at other charters in other towns in the town manager form of government. I'm obviously not on the commission, but I think that they'll be reaching out. So that would be something I'd be interested in knowing, is how many towns have done a charter revision in the last couple of years for this form of government.
Great. Thank you, Wendy. And we'll be happy to help you with that. And know that the Connecticut Town and City Management Association would also be willing to assist with providing information regarding the council manager form.
Great.
Any other business?
I was just going to add, I will be taking a class next semester with Matt Hart on local government and management. So I'll be expanding my knowledge there.
It will be fun, Wendy. So just for a disclaimer, folks, I teach one class a year, just one class a year at UConn School of Public Policy. I teach local government leadership and management, and it's a lot of fun. I'll have to invite some of you to serve as guest speakers.
On a similar note, over the next probably quarter, we're going to be looking to work with our Department of Labor, Workforce Development, to create as the first layer of kind of introductory courses on artificial intelligence, a couple of seminars that would be appropriate for people like us. We're doing a lot with AI in the city here, and we want our council is asked to learn more, several other people. So we're talking to Google and some others about possibly Charter Oak and some folks through the Workforce Council about setting up some sessions where we can all kind of come up to speed on the implications for our businesses, our residents, and our government. So stay tuned. And if you have interest, let me know.
Can I just add something, another plug for UConn School of Public Policy? They have, I can't even come up with the name of it, but a program on their website where they have day sessions open to, people in the school and people outside of the school. And there is one in February 21st on AI, and there's some speakers coming to that if anybody's interested.
Great.
That's great. Anybody else have anything?
Lori, this is Peter Souza from Windsor. This is more FYI. For those who have not had conversations with your town assessors, please do so and get a good handle on how the new car tax valuation could impact you. I know we're all waiting patiently for the DOT's files to come out, but with the new depreciation formula, has potential for some of us to have a pretty big hit in terms of valuation. So a reminder.
Okay, great, Peter. Anybody else? Wendy?
Do I have my hand up?
Yep. Now you
do. I do.
If we don't have anything else, somebody like to make a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Is there a second? Okay. I think
Jeff second.
Did. Susan.
All right. Jeff, all in favor?
Either way.
Aye.
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 Okay, great. Have a great day, everybody. And thank you so much for joining us.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you all. Thank you, Lori. Great job.
Happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
You too.